Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
I know you're listening, so go big.
Matt Spiegel.
I really like sports.
Matt Spiegel is one of the great baseball people, and not only in this town, but across the country.
He is certainly a threat to run if the Mariners are feeling sassy.
Matt Spiegel. Yep.
And today I was listening coming to the ballpark. Matt Spiegel got on with some takes that were pure gold.
Matt Spiegel with Bernstein and Rahimi.
Wasn't quite a save, Sitch.
On 670 The Score.
Perfect time to spread our baseball wings a little bit here at the All-Star break with Matt Spiegel, who's on Twitter at MattSpiegel670, co-host not only of Parkins and Spiegel, but also Hit and Run. And he is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And he joins us on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Hello, Speeds.
Just hanging out, chain smoking, gargling eggs,
sure.
as you do on a Thursday morning to get the voice going. Hi.
Gotta get people into character, right?
Like, yes.
If you're gonna play the role of Matt Spiegel, also the demon locust baseball analyst, sure, why not?
That's a delightful uncredited role for Mercedes McCambridge. I did not know that. I was not aware of that. So thank you.
I was at the Windy City Smokeout minding my own business when I see this shirt pass me that says Jews for Bacon.
Yeah.
I look at the shirt, read the shirt, and then I wonder who's wearing it. And it is one, Matt Spiegel. Did you
gotta
have
be
a good
passionate
time?
Yeah, you got to be passionate about something, Layla. You know, I stand up and I advocate for the things that matter to me. I had a great time there. You were with the flowers in your hair and the beverages in your hand.
Oh, wow.
And the country,
like
country
hippie chick stuff.
Oh no, no, no! I just they were handing out Lays at the three dots and a dash tent. Mm. So I took one and then I put it in my head.
Yeah, no, that was lovely to run into you and Shane. It was that was fun stuff, and it was nice to be out with the people. And I just played a show last night, Tributosaurus, over at Theater on the Lake with like 700 of our closest friends, mostly inside. You could go outside in the patio if you wanted, but that was my first inside, you know, real big rock show since last March. That was a little daunting, but exciting, and ultimately very thrilling. So we're back, baby.
We heard from the commissioner, and he said some things, and then he kind of unsaid some other things about what is going to remain and what's going to be negotiated. So there was something sounded a little cynical about something he wants to pretend he wants to keep that he's going to give back in negotiation.
Yeah.
So I want to get into that, but the lead for me was that he made reference to perhaps what we all thought was coming, and that is a league-sanctioned, standardized grip enhancement.
Well, and that would be fine. I don't know that we really even need it, though, do we? I mean, watch this. These guys are doing okay. The ones who are great are still great. The ones who are forced to adjust, some will adjust and some will not. Gerrit Cole with an unbelievable 129 pitch shutout against Zach Greinke and the Astros just before the break. Lucas Giolito's last start before the break, he threw so many sliders at such better locations than he has all year long.
Because he has to.
So all of a sudden he's working the fastball off the slider on the outside corner and the changeup off the fastball on the inside corner. He's working the quadrants. Good. And if you're good enough, you can adjust. And I think they are. I mean, the truth is, this is a very good start. Since the 3rd of June, the league-wide batting average is .246. It was .236 before then. That's a 10-point jump. That's a big deal. Since the 3rd of June, league-wide OPS is .736. That's up 29 points from .707 on the 3rd of June. So this is an excellent start. There will be more, but I don't know that these guys need a standardized grip enhancement myself. But, you know, it will all end up being a bargaining chip. That's the problem, that every little item is going to end up being a bargaining chip, and it's going to carry the same kind of weight as much bigger and more serious issues in terms of the business side.
Well, and then I think you bring up a good point when you say, do they actually need it? Because if they don't and pitchers are seemingly okay, the injury component of this is not something we have to worry about, then why change it?
Screw them. Screw them. They've been getting so many advantages, have the pitchers, for the last decade, be it the science or the grip enhancement or and the pitch lab and all that stuff. You know, Chris Bryant said we were duped into thinking it mattered. Max Muncy was asked, is it easier to hit since the crackdown? He said, yes. Let's just leave it at that. So, I mean, screw him. The balance was off, and the balance is getting back to where it should be in terms of the hitter and the pitcher. So, screw him.
So, as far as what they've done, and regardless of whether it was pandemic-related or not, how would you prioritize what you want them to keep, whether it's seven-inning doubleheaders, whether it's the Manfred man in extras? Do you want universal DH, et cetera? What would be your idealized version of baseball?
Wow, I haven't heard the Manfred man, and I'm frankly blinded by the light for that reference.
It's
a
Craig Calcaterra reference. He is called it the Manfred man.
Oh, that's solid. That's solid. Do what did he, everybody? I think that was Manfred man at the beginning. So, look, seven-inning doubleheaders, you can't do it for a split doubleheader. You can't ask people to pay full price for a seven-inning game. If you want to have... I actually don't mind at all seven-inning doubleheaders if they are true doubleheaders and it's one ticket price and it's one long day. I think that's fine. But it seems like they're probably going to give that one back. Don't take the extra inning rule away. The Manfred man, I love that. It's a good thing. It shortens absurdly long nights. No game has gone more than 13 innings the last two seasons. That's good. But more than that, when I'm sitting there looking on my Xfinity Sports app at all the different scores and I'm choosing what game to go to, or if I'm in the bedroom and I'm using MLB At Bat on the smart TV, or MLB TV, and I see the scores and I say, ooh, tight, it's a late game. Oh, you know, the Dodgers and the Rockies are tied in the 10th. As soon as I go there now, I know I've got a pitcher in trouble. Mm-hmm. The inning starts with a pitcher in trouble. You can flip to that game immediately and see strategic choices that must be made immediately. See tension right away at like the last minute or two of an NBA game. That's good for the health of the game. So, you know, I really want to think about the promotion and the health of the game and the attractiveness of the game. And I think it's terrific to know that there is instant drama every half inning at the end of a good game, as opposed to, like, how many times have we done it in the past? We say, oh, okay, that's extra innings. Well, I don't want to watch the top. I don't care about the top of the Mariners inning. I'll wait till they're batting, maybe, and I'll check it out. Or you won't even bother because you don't know when the drama's coming. They're delivering drama instantly, whether they score or not. And I think that is a healthy thing for the game. So I don't want that one to go away.
What were your takeaways from what we heard from Wilson Contreras and David Ross and then also Craig Kimbrell and Chris Bryant about it?
Oh, boy. I think, you know, first of all, Wilson has to tell the teammates before he tells the media. That's just, you know, common leadership sense, which perhaps he doesn't have yet. And it's now David Ross's job to facilitate the difficult conversations, and he loves those. He's thoroughly comfortable with being uncomfortable and making people uncomfortable with those conversations. So I know some of those happened on Sunday, and they'll probably happen some more. But what Wilson was talking about is not the visual effort of the little things. He's talking about preparation. He's talking about commitment physically every day, every year. And whether Javi falls asleep on the base paths or watches a ball go off the wall, or Contreras watches a ball and gets yelled at by Joe Maddon as he did a couple years ago, what you can't question with those guys is their preparation, their physical commitment. Look how Wilson has gotten better as a framer. you know, Javi's block on the low outside slider is something mental when he's up there, but he does work his ass off. And Wilson is talking about the people who don't. And there are people in there who don't. And this exposes some of the other issues with this core. The offensive failings have been well documented, much discussed, but nobody has stepped up to lead of this core. No one has stepped up to do it. And remember when everyone was trying to write about how Anthony Rizzo was stepping up as a leader after Ross and Lackey left. And you guys remember Theo saying directly to reporters, hold on here. He's getting there. Pumping the brakes on that. The guy who stepped up as a leader in 2017 was John Jay. I remember reading about the winter meetings in 2018 when they were talking about we need to bring some people in. They ended up bringing in Daniel Descalso and hoping that he would fill some sort of John Jay-esque veteran leadership role. I know, but that was the idea. But Theo said at the time, look, I don't want to minimize the guys we do have. Anthony cares a great deal and wants to take his leadership to another level. That's the exact quote from 2018. Hayward has deferred to Anthony. Last March, me and Parkins and Mac talking with Hayward, and we told him he'd be a good judge for Kangaroo Court. And he said, nah, I'll leave that to Anthony. So look, everybody internally has been hoping that Anthony would step up. Externally, we've been assuming that Anthony would step up. But he really hasn't in terms of communication and getting on guys. And
it's more than that. The guy says he's not going to get vaccinated. I mean, that's actively bad leadership.
Well, there is certainly that this year. And we know Contreras and Baez have been active cutting PSAs for that as well. But what I'm talking about is certain, you know, one offseason, Anthony came in, lost a bunch of weight. Everybody's like, hey, that's great. That's great. That hasn't been the case every offseason. The preparation of every day, the commitment of every day. And just in terms of communication, inactivity and lack of communication ends up being its own form of leadership. And it's a bad kind. So you know what I mean? There's a void. There is an absolute void there. And Wilson's comments expose it. And, you know, Ross is in a tough spot. Do I side with my guy, Anthony? Do I side with the people who are edgy at what has not been there in terms of leadership? And publicly, what does he do? And that's a developing situation for David. But, you know, I'm disappointed in the communication and leadership of the core, not just the offense. And sadly, we're seeing why the whole thing does need to be broken up. And it's not just about offensive failings.
Well, and the way you make it sound, when you say what you said in that last 10 seconds, I think that that is important. The idea that this is a former teammate of his and somebody who he had an established, strong relationship with, and the other teammate, Wilson Contreras, knows it. And this might be, to date, the biggest challenge of David Ross's career as far as a manager is concerned.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the rest of this year is going to be a challenge. I mean, we're in July, and we're already at the point where the games themselves largely do not matter. That's a lot of season to get through, man. That is a lot of conversation to have. That is a lot of rallying to do, a lot of focusing to demand, and it is a different kind of challenge, and it's a very unpleasant challenge. And next year might be its own kind of unpleasant challenge as well. We'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, this is awkward stuff. And I can't shake the feeling, Parkins put it in my head, of September and that final week for some of these guys being the end, and this kind of perfunctory sort of empty calorie baseball going on at Wrigley and on the road while they play out their last few games as a Cub for this remarkable era. And maybe all things kind of end that way, unless you are a masterful organization that continuously drafts and develops and reloads and just kind of keeps going. But this thing is going to end ugly, and it's unfortunate, but maybe that's just how most things end.
Well, maybe not. Maybe Jed Hoyer right now, we could, in the next 45 minutes of this show, Jed Hoyer could have flipped some of these pieces for hordes of prospects who might be knocking on the door of the major league. So there's that opportunity's not gone. This isn't written yet.
Well, I know, but who's... Who's going to trade for Anthony Rizzo? A first baseman who's 14th in the majors in OPS for
I'm
a
not.
First baseman with a bulky back that has barked up twice. I mean, maybe they will. It's a guy with, you know, a lot of postseason experience, and he's still a terrific defensive player when he's healthy and can certainly captain an infield. But I don't think folks are going to trade for him. I don't think folks are going to trade for Javi. I mean, if you ask me right now what my gut says, I think Bryant will be gone. I think Kimbrel will be gone by the deadline. Maybe Chafin as well. Maybe Tapera if somebody bites. There might be a shocker in there. But I suspect that Baez and Rizzo are the guys playing out the string in September, and then we'll see what happens in the offseason with them both.
I've had a lot of people criticize me for overreacting to the All-Star Game uniforms, and for me it's two levels. The uniforms themselves were objectively ugly, but that's only part of the point. Part of the point was the idea of wearing a standardized, homogenized uniform ruins the aesthetics of the All-Star Game for me. I didn't know who anybody was.
Mm-hmm.
I needed Joe Buck to tell me who these players were because I didn't have the visual cue of the uniform. It really bugged me, and it bugged because it took away whatever childlike joy that I have in those memories of that tableau of all of those uniforms. That's special, and to not have it really sucked.
Really, really sucked, and they should never do it again. Apparently, there is already a plan for another set of new uniforms next year. It is horrifically short-sighted. And yes, there's the ugliness, and there's the aesthetic callback to your childlike joy. But think about the next generation. What are we doing here? All of what you said is valuable. And when you see the guys being introduced before the games as we go down the line, hey, that's my team. But during the game, when somebody new shows up, who the person on your couch with you who's watching and doesn't watch the games with you every night, when they're suddenly watching, they should say, who's that guy on the A's? Who's that guy wearing the Oakland uniform? Who's that guy wearing the San Diego uniform? This is when you get to know the people
yes.
that you're trying to promote and market. This is when you meet them. This is when you understand who Joey Gallo is. And somebody might say, oh, he uses a big bat. Look at that swing. That's kind of cool. Oh, he hits a lot of homers. Well, maybe I'll check out Texas next time they're on or whatever. You know what I mean? When are you supposed to meet these people and be introduced to these people? This freaking game, and put them in their actual uniforms. The compromise should be their actual home or road uniforms to match whatever, and give them a new hat. You want to design a new hat every year? That's delightful. You'll probably sell a bunch of hats. Or if you really want to do it the other way and do the jerseys, let them wear their own hats. You know, at least one or the other. Give them something to recognize. And that was apparently true inside the ballpark, too, where Herman Marquez of the Rockies comes in from the bullpen, and the crowd doesn't know it's him. It's their own guy, and they're not even giving him a huge ovation until he's announced. Then they're like, oh, that is our guy. Why? Because he probably looks a little like Taiwan Walker, you know, and you're not sure who the hell's coming in to pitch.
Well,
disaster.
The competing elements, too, on the front with the three big letters of the team abbreviation going downward, I thought that was bizarre, too, because when they zoomed in on them on player intros, you couldn't see the other two letters. You only saw the one. Then you're trying to figure out what the one stands for. The logo is superimposed on top of it. And I think they think that this is a good idea now, similar to those local market hats where you're just going to throw everything you possibly can on it and make it work. And it doesn't.
No.
So to me, at least get rid of the three letters, because those don't matter and they don't pop on a camera anyway.
Yeah, it's just so silly. There's the ugliness, there's the aesthetics, there's the sentimental callback, and then there's the promotion, and all of it is just so damn short-sighted, because you've got a commissioner who is nothing but a steward for the owners and really isn't thinking about the good of the sport or the game enough.
Before we let you go, we need to look at the team that matters more than the other at the moment, and that team is 19 games over 500 and has a death grip on a playoff spot right now. The White Sox must be maximizing their roster to win the World Series. What should they be focused on as they're having all these phone conversations?
I'm okay with the outfield mix, in part because I trust Andrew Vaughn in left field, and I want to see his bat out there. in part because Eloy is coming and will be a DH, allowing other people to play the outfield. I don't want to see Eloy out there. In part because Adam Engel has turned into a beast against righties and is a terrific defensive outfielder. And maybe Luis Robert will come. But defensively, I feel good about finishing in the outfield with a lead. If I have to use a Brian Goodwin at an outfield spot, okay. If I have to use a Billy Hamilton at an outfield spot.
Goodwin's bad, though.
Defensively?
He gets bad jumps.
Well, don't put him in center, but if I need to survive with Goodwin in a corner, I feel okay about that. The question is, are you okay with Leury Garcia as your finishing second baseman? Garcia or Mendick as your finishing second baseman?
You want to at least platoon him if you can.
Yeah, not ideal. Sometimes he's got the hard hands going on.
Right. So the eighth and ninth inning, who's there when you're protecting a lead in a playoff game? That's a consideration, and I don't know that they have that guy on the roster. And then the difficult one is, who's your best defensive catcher? Who's your
Zavala.
Best? It's Sebi Zavala. So are you comfortable if Grandal's knee is not up to speed? Are you comfortable with Sebi Zavala in a big playoff game, and you sacrifice the bat, and you have a situation? Who was the guy for Maddox all those years in Atlanta when they wouldn't play Javi Lopez at catcher because they had to play Maddox's guy? The name is
wasn't Paul Bacco, was it?
No. Damn it, I'm an idiot, and I shouldn't have brought up a reference I can't finish. But
okay.
Anyway,
Collins caught Rodon for his no hitter, and you could argue that at least Rodon prefers to use Collins.
By the way, Eddie Perez.
Eddie Perez is who I'm going for. Yep. Thank you very much. So, and Atlanta was all too happy to sacrifice a bat for the health and happiness of a starting pitcher. And you might have a lineup that can do that too with Sebi Zavala. But you really are you okay with putting that out there? So, I would hope and assume they are looking at still second baseman, a great defensive finishing second baseman, as well as a bat. And Adam Frazier would qualify as that. And potentially a catcher that you feel real good about defensively with a tiny bit of pop. So I still look at Pittsburgh, and I think of a package deal for Frazier and Jacob Stallings. And that's the one I'd still be looking at and trying to get done.
It's going to be expensive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But it better be an expense you take on financially more than prospect. This is your moment to take it on. They showed their willingness with the DFAing of Eaton. But they showed a lack of willingness with the offensive stoppage at the DH position. So here's another moment, Jerry. Swallow as many dollars as you can in a possible trade so Rick doesn't have to give up a prospect that might matter in the next 4 years.
And now Adam Eaton is an angel.
So does he.
Is he? Yeah. I thought it was going to be a Brave. The Braves were looking into it after the Acuna deal. I missed that he's an angel. My God, Joe Maddon will just take anything.
I was so curious about that when I saw the news come down. It was late last night.
Have fun. Have fun with that in your clubhouse. Enjoy.
Oh,
maybe it'll be better there. So at Theater on the Lake, Tributosaurus became whom?
The Talking Heads.
Oh.
So damn fun. You know, when the punks found dance, you know, and just all these jams that turned into tunes. Stuff you know, like Once in a Lifetime, and you know, but then like the deeper stuff, like Born Under Punches and The Great Curve, and oh my God, and we did all the hits, but some of those deep dance things are great. And if you listen closely to some of that stuff, you can hear the entire career of LCD Sound System in
wow.
there. You can hear it
recapitulated, yeah.
And that's not an insult by any stretch of the imagination. It's just there's a direct line from what the Heads were doing to some of that dance punk that still dominates.
I'd say the Heads are more OCD Sound System in this case, but I just read a wonderful article. And I sent to a friend who's the father of an autistic, high-functioning autistic son. And it's David Byrne discussing his own autism and what he thinks was undiagnosed and has been undiagnosed. And it is a revisitation of Talking Heads music through the lens of human communication and what we now know about autism. And it's brilliant.
Wow.
It's really erudite stuff about him trying to find a way to be heard. If David Byrne trying to be, and the fact that he is also a musical genius and is so creative, but this has been, the Talking Heads have been his way of can you hear me on this level? Can you understand me on this level, both verbally and sonically?
Well, that's really interesting. And you know, and completely one of a kind, his voice, and still doing it. Still doing it. That show that was in New York, I heard such rave reviews about that show where they're all wearing gray, and maybe some of people have seen the videos of it. I'd love to get back there and see it if he opens back up post-pandemic.
Spiegs, thank you as always. We'll be listening this afternoon.
Spiegel and Parkins? Nah, it's a totally different show. Parkins and Spiegel at 2 o'clock every day. Check it out. Thank you,
we
guys.
We appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
That is Matt Spiegel. He does a baseball hit with us on Thursdays because we can, and it's fun.
And we like Spiegs.
We watched the NBA last night. Everybody did because it was on, and it was good. It was kind of a strange game in that there was a lot of good defense played. There were a lot of turnovers, but also shot making was on display. And when the home team is holding serve, it starts to build the drama for whatever's next. We'll have some sound and some thoughts next on The Score.
Their connection in the pick-and-roll game, their ability to make plays is very good. And Giannis just made a spectacular block, a spectacular play, his ability to cover ground and get to that point, get to the top. You know, that's an NBA Finals special moment right there. And we're going to need more of them. You know, his impact on the game on both ends of the court, it's a big-time block. You know, that's what he's capable of.
That's Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks head coach, sort of laconically talking about an all-time great finals defensive play.
Let's start there. Let's start with that Giannis block and how we said to Mullenhaw, it was the most significant playoff block we've seen in a game since when? And I mentioned LeBron against the Warriors when Cleveland ended up winning those NBA finals. That's what I thought of first. Not saying that's the only one, but that was a game-saving play.
Now Booker with Tucker on him. Throws it up for Ayton. Shot blocked by Antetokounmpo. What a block from Giannis.
Spectacular. And the skill set that has to exist, the body type, the skill set, the abilities to do what he did completely under control. That is, there's only a handful of people who've ever played basketball that would be capable of doing something like that.
I don't know that we marvel enough at Giannis when it comes to just the body he has for the surface he's playing on, yeah. How he can take a ball at half court, make two strides, not even have to dribble, and it's a dunk. That happened last night, too.
That happens every game.
But still, to have it happen there in the NBA Finals at home, they were down 0-2 previously, and they came through.
The series doesn't start till somebody wins a road game, and it may happen. I don't want Chris Paul to go out like this. This is not fun to watch. Where he, what is he, 36?
36.
And he looks every bit of it. And it's a very fast game with some really quick people. And when they start knocking the ball away from him, when he gets sort of in between in pace and finds himself in that little slack water area where normally he would just rise up and drain a 16-foot shot, where he seems hesitant now, and then it ends up on the front of the rim, just his inability to keep the ball in his hands, guys flashing at him and knocking it away, and it's just the number of turnovers and how other guys just look faster. I don't think he's this bad right now, but he had a rough night. He had an ugly night.
Do you also think that it was the Bucks making defensive adjustments because they made him look silly and playing careless with the ball at times?
Well, that's what I mean with the flash double teams, where they're sending an extra guy that he didn't know how to deal with. If comes out and recovers, and then they get the ball out of his hands. Even some of those quick exchanges where he uses that rub screen to try to get it back, where he'll flip it to Crowder and then kind of try to hide and get the ball back. Even those were being disrupted a little bit. There's still a lot of chess to be played in this series, but when you see guys like Booker, you know, making contested shots, Middleton making contested shots, both teams are playing defense, and that's why it's not necessarily all pretty out there, because that's the stage of the series where we are now. First action taken away, second action taken away, reset it, try something with another angle, use the other side of a screen. You know, they're the way personnel is being used right now is you're aware of who's on the floor all the time, and that's why the matchups are getting tighter.
Well, and do you remember Rick Camp talking to us about the different defensive looks that they were going to see? And he mentioned the drop defense, and we've seen the adjustments and how they've played out. But yeah, I mentioned to you in the pre-show meeting, it was a weird game in that it was so competitive. It was so defensively well played. And yet you had 40 point scorers in Chris Middleton. You had Booker getting 42. And that's rare that you have a complement of all of those things in an NBA playoff game. It was almost like a complete game in a way where you got to see everything that you wanted to see. But the turnovers were the key here. I didn't realize how few turnovers the Bucks had until I saw the box score just now. Five. That's it. Five. We've watched Bulls basketball the last 2 years. That's disgusting. They commit five turnovers in a quarter. One person.
Yeah, sometimes just start the game. Just right out of the gate. Then Billy Donovan looks around like, what do we do out there? I don't know.
I can hear Billy Donovan calling the timeout within the first 3 minutes right now.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the exact opposite of that. And that's, at the end of the day, it's still how you win. But what about also Chris Middleton outscoring? I took a picture of the stats because I thought ESPN really did a very nice job in their postgame coverage. I stayed on it for a while. Jeff Van Gundy was great in his postgame analysis. In the final 2 minutes and 15 seconds in game four, the Suns had 4 points. Chris Middleton had 10 of his 40.
Mm-hmm. And I don't really have a huge rooting interest, but when they show how excited Milwaukee is, it's sort of like how I felt last year watching, or 2 years ago, watching the all of the Fred Van Vliet contingent outside in Rockford. And what that meant, it was almost like Rockford got a championship it's never gotten. And for all the years that I spent there in pro sports in Rockford and knowing how hungry that city has been to see everybody out there downtown and the wonderful new sort of artsy fun area downtown enjoying themselves. And boy, Milwaukee, it's a great scene. I don't think Milwaukee's going to end up winning this thing, but it would be a hell of a story for them. And I do love the town. Milwaukee's a great place, and I don't have anything negative to say. I've always had wonderful experiences there, wonderful times there, and know people from there. And I would like them to win. I don't think Milwaukee's going to win, but I guess if I do have a little bit of rooting interest, it'd probably be closer to home.
Me too. And I thought that this was a really good point by Candace Buckner, who's just a fabulous basketball writer. And she said, this is my first extended time in Milwaukee, and I found people here to be perfectly okay with others hating on their city. In my opinion, Indy, Detroit, Cleveland all have small market syndrome, and they're defensive. Same for her, St. Louis. But Milwaukee, they're like, yeah, we're not for everybody, and are cool with that. And I think that that's actually true. I joked with her and said, and they'll hand you a brat while they're doing it.
Oh, there's better food than just brats in Milwaukee, too. There are actually some pretty decent restaurants downtown.
Well, yeah, but it's the idea of them being friendly enough to give you food while they're saying it.
And I've got brats in the fridge now that you reminded me. Thank you.
Shane's meat is going to be in for a surprise today.
Yeah, we had the old sausage drop, so to speak. We had the pre-show sausage drop. And you should see Layla pulling out these shrink wrap packages from the box going, what the hell is this? And what's this? And what's that? And Jay Zawoski had to ask me what knockwurst was? Really? Your name's Zawoski. It should be in your blood. You should be that should already be imprinted in your brain, like the reptile brain there to know what knockwurst is.
I was making the jokes that one makes when you get a box of sausage.
Yes, she was working for Big Wiener, apparently.
Some would argue that's always the case for people. But when it comes to Milwaukee and this finals, I do think that the temperament is part of what makes you pick a team. And it is nice to see everybody being happy for their team there in a lovely way.
And Giannis had some fun last night, too, after the game, after he had to take a little bit of a break and found a creative way to explain it in his second or maybe third language. I don't know how many he speaks, but he had to ask permission to use a certain American expression, and everything's okay. We can even play it on these airwaves.
Unlike what I said earlier today on the show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.